Welcome to Just a Minute. Welcome to Just a Minute. My name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but around the world, but also to welcome to the program four exciting, dynamic performers who are going to show their skill with words and language as they try and speak on the subject that I give them, and they try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. And those four are, seated on my right, Paul Merton and Alan Cochran, and seated on my left, Lisa Tarbuck and Jonathan Ross. Please welcome all four of them. Beside me sits Trudy Stevens, who's going to help me with the score and blow the whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And Paul, let's begin with you. Oh, what a lovely subject. The night I dreamt I painted the Sistine Chapel. Got a nice little reaction from the audience. But will you tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now?
The night I dreamt I painted the Sistine Chapel, I turned to Michelangelo, I said, Mickey, too many angels. What's it all doing with the clouds? You want sponsorship? Why am I suddenly talking like this? And I said, there was a man said to me as I wandered out of the pub with him, arm in hand, and we said to each other, look at that magnificent ceiling. If we installed a mirror in the floor, reflecting up at the glory, people down the centuries will come along and observe your great artwork. The fantastic painter looked at me surely in the eye, and although he was flown to the gills with cider, he said...
Lisa, you challenge.
Flown to the gills?
Flown to the gills in cider. It's an old Cornish saying. Which is unusual because they don't make cider there. When they visit in Somerset.
But I think the illusion you created with that phrase was sufficient for us to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, yes, yeah, it's poetic.
Yes. It was poetic. Yeah. Right. So will you continue with 24 seconds?
I remember that.
Yeah. Well, you've got to find a way to keep going any old how in this show, haven't you? The night I dreamt I painted the Sistine Chapel, starting now.
Unfortunately, before I'd gone to sleep, I'd eaten an awful lot of cheese, and I think that's what brought about the nightmare. There I was, panicking that health and safety were coming along to test my pigments. They said there may be too much lead in this colouring. I said, how dare you? I've worked with some of the greats. Look at me. I'm fantastic. I've been on the cover of the TV Times, I have, you know. And within a second, I realised the gods in heaven were looking down on me.
So Paul Merton's magnificent flights of fantasy took him further forward until the whistle went, gained the extra point for doing so, and Lisa, it is your turn to begin. I don't know whether this applies to you, but the subject we've got here is why I am never on time. Will you talk on it starting now?
I'll tell you why I'm never on time. It's a gene I've inherited from my mother. My father will tell you all about it. He waits in the hall and gives her an extra 15 minutes to get in the car and plays Merry Hell with Pauline at least 15 times. Oh. What are the chances of picking the same number?
Yeah. Yes, you could have said 30 minutes. Right?
I know.
Right. So, Jonathan, Ross, you challenge first. Your challenge?
Repetition of 15.
15, right. Jonathan, a correct challenge. You get a point for that, of course. You take over the subject. There are 44 seconds available. Why I am never on time, starting now.
Why I am never on time is not entirely my fault. You must look to my wife for this situation, although I hate to be this gender specific and I don't really want to generalise, but it does seem to be that women do have more of a problem getting themselves up and getting out of the house than men. I could have learned how to play the piano.
Lisa,
I felt I kind of had to do that, even though... I'll say sort of deviation, really.
What do you think?
From being a very splendid, woman-friendly man.
But on that occasion, you thought he was being a little bit sexist.
Yes.
Right. So that is deviation in our show.
Yes.
So you have the subject back.
Thank you. Sexist is now
and
a new one.
27 seconds available, Lisa. Why I'm never on time, starting now.
I'm never on time simply because I don't wear a watch. And when I'm due somewhere, I can always find a little bit of something extra to do, like put a wash on. Or, in fact, now that I've got an electronic cat...
Thomas, what was your challenge?
I don't think anyone has an electronic cat, do they? I mean,
I think that's deviation.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine what an electronic cat looks
well,
like.
Well, I've tried.
Have you wind your electronic cat up?
I don't need to. I plug it in.
Well answered. Jonathan, a correct challenge. 14 seconds are still available. Why I am never on time, starting now.
Why am I never on time is a mystery to me. I wish I could blame another whole generation.
It's not really a mystery. He was blaming his wife 2 minutes ago.
Nicholas, I'm trying to grow as a person and move away from that kind of cheap everyday sexism.
I know, but you didn't establish that, though, did you? And so in just a minute, you have to establish something before you can make the statement. So, benefit of the doubt to you, Alan, and you have 10 seconds. You tell us something about why I am never on time, starting now.
Why I am never on time is basically because appointments fundamentally do not matter to me. I disrespect every single booking in my diary because that is more fun.
So Alan Cochrane was then speaking as the whistle went and gained an extra point. And at the end of the round, he's equal in the lead with Jonathan Ross. And Jonathan, we'd like you to begin the next round because the subject is comics. Quite simply, comics. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
I have loved comics since I was a tiny boy, and I don't mean the kind of people I'm sitting here with right now, who are wonderful and funny and irregular-looking in their own special ways. No, I mean those four-colour adventures that first burst upon the scene in America in the late 1930s and told tales of superheroes and romance and so many other great adventures. They are world-renowned. No matter where you are on this planet, if you talk about your love of Superman or Batman, be it the favelas of Brazil or the slums of Hampstead, you will be welcomed as if you were a long-lost cousin and offered a cup of coffee. And come in and have a chinwag and a herbal cigarette while we talk about our favourite stars. There are so many comics available out there, I'm getting a little bit lost in my love of comics. For example...
I'm partly saving him from himself, but also I think we've had repetition of love of comics, and he's...
I know, it's a pity, because you went for 50 seconds.
Ah!
But Alan, it was a correct challenge, so you have 10 seconds in which to tell us something about comics starting now.
My love of comics lasts exactly 50 seconds, and I would love to tell you all about...
Lisa Chan.
Two loves.
Yeah. Same mistake, innit? Hoisted on my own petard.
Love ruined him.
So, Lisa, you have the subject of comics, another point to you, of course, and there are 5 seconds still available, starting now.
Every Saturday morning, my brother and I would wait for our comics to arrive. I used to get Bella at the Bar, which was a feature.
So, at the end of that round, Lisa Tarbuck was speaking as the whistle went. And they're all equal there. Lisa Tarbuck, Jonathan Ross and Alan Cochrane. They're equal in the lead ahead of Paul Merton. Twinkle. And Alan, we're with you to begin. And the subject now is how to patch up a quarrel. 60 seconds starting now.
The best way to patch up a quarrel is exactly the same way as you would patch up anything. Simply take a needle and thread and a layer of fabric and stitch it across the mouth of the person with which you are quarrelling. You will soon find that your arguments hold far more sway than they did mere moments before. The other way of patching up a quarrel is simply agreeing with your opponent in said quarrel and hoping that they are too stupid to realise that you are playing a cunning game of agreeing with them in order to...
Jonathan challenge.
Repetition of agreeing, really.
Yeah,
I thought I'd gone agreeing, but I hadn't.
So, Jonathan, another point to you for a correct challenge. There are 32 seconds available. How to patch up a quarrel, starting now.
How to patch up a quarrel is one of those situations that we've all had to encounter in the past, and no one really knows for sure if there is a tried and true method. Never go to sleep on an angry word is one thing that I have learned after 25 years of blissful marriage, in which I've always valued my wife as much as myself and every other human being, regardless of gender, size, or indeed how long they take to get ready when you're trying to bloody get out and there's a taxi waiting outside. A quarrel can occur in so many different ways, and so...
So Jonathan Ross was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point, and he's moved into the lead at the end of the round. Paul Merton, we're with you to begin, and...
Oh, what a difficult subject. Me and John Logie Baird. So you've written the subject down. Tell us something about me and John Logie Baird in this game, starting now.
Well, there I was walking through Jellystone Park, and I had my little friend with me, Boo Ditto, and we were looking around for a picnic area because the ranger was somewhere nearby, and I didn't want to get on the bad side of him, I can tell you, because the tourist season in this national park where I am ensconced as an animation has a basic year-long run of about 5 weeks in the autumn and several days in other seasons. Meanwhile, on the other side of the Atlantic, a U-boat surfaced. It was looking for the biscuit run towards Amazon. Me and John Logie Baird walked across the hills at Hastings while he discussed his latest invention. He dreamed of a television set, a screen that would bring scenes from all various parts of the world. He didn't know then, the canny Scotsman, that one day these screens would be reduced. Screens and screen. Quite deliberately, I'm afraid.
Yes, it was. You said screen the first time.
I said screen the first time and screen the second time.
Screen's the second time.
Yeah.
He's played the game before.
I have no idea. I don't know why people didn't buzz me.
Yogi Bear.
So, anyway, it was singular and plural there, so an incorrect challenge. You still have 10 seconds, Paul, on me and John Logie Baird, starting now.
I attended the first London showing of his brilliant device. The crowds gathered inside Selfridges here in London, and they looked at each other in amazement as the black and white...
So Paul Merton was then speaking as the whistle went again, that extra point. And from the other one in the round, he's moved forward. He's only 1 point behind Alan Cochrane and Lisa Tarbuck. And Lisa, it is your turn to begin. And the subject now, I don't like this subject, actually. It's cheating.
Oh, nor do I.
Oh. Anyway, it's been thought of. Will you tell us something about the subject of cheating in this game, starting now?
Cheating is a programme that's on cable television where they watch somebody who comes forward and says, hey, I think my partner's cheating on me. So they go and film the... I've only watched it twice.
Repetition.
Think of the word.
Right. We give you hesitation, Paul. Thanks. Right. There are 48 seconds still available, Paul. Cheating starting now.
Well, it all depends where your moral compass is set. Some people will say cheating has merely taken advantage of the other fellow's lack of intelligence. You can adapt your policies.
Jonathan, your challenge.
Is there anyone who has any medical knowledge in... I think Paul is suffering from something. I don't know what it is.
No, he brings out voices on occasions and decides to do it in a different voice. There's nothing in the rules which says you can't change the voice. And
I thought that was one of the warning signs.
No, no. So, Paul, it was an incorrect challenge.
It
you have
was.
35 seconds still available on cheating starting now.
As I looked in the dead, cold eyes of the croupier, he passed the card towards me. I looked at it. It was the ace I needed.
Jonathan Chow.
Looked and looked. Repetition.
Yes, looked in the eye. Yeah. At, yes, yes.
Hmm? So, well, listen, Jonathan. 28 seconds available for you, Jonathan, on cheating starting now.
Cheats never prosper, they say, but in my experience, those who are cheating often do finish ahead of those who have the good manners not to. For example, many years ago, I was playing cards with a friend of mine, and he was quite clearly not sticking to the rules. He was pretending to have some things that he did not have, and he was at times betting very heavily to scare me into leaving my stronger hand on the table instead of...
So, Jonathan Ross, who then speaking as a whistle when, gained that extra point, and he's moved into the lead. He's, reason why he shouldn't. He's just ahead of Paul Merton, who is one ahead of Lisa Tarbuck and Alan Cochrane. They're equal in third place. Jonathan, we'd like you to begin the next round, and the subject is keeping exotic pets. 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
Keeping exotic pets is something I know a considerable amount about. We have had many unusual beasts in our house over the years. I don't wish to boast, but how many of you can say, as I can, that they have given regular antibiotic injections to an iguana under his or her left armpit, and a large and aggressive one it was too. My confusion over its gender is nothing to do with the lack of interest. It just goes to show how difficult it is to correctly sex these weird critters. Dave, as ours was called, one day surprised us by laying a massive and impressive egg. So it just goes to show a name does not necessarily make the man. We had a snake as well, and you need to know that these kind of thingamajigs will not repay the affection that you show them, unlike a cat or a household dog. The snake one day bit my...
What's your challenge?
Repetition of snake.
Yes. I know.
Got me.
And you went for 53 seconds.
Oh.
Lisa did have a correct challenge, and there are 7 seconds for you, Lisa, on keeping exotic pets, starting now.
I had a boa constrictor once. His name was Monty, and I used to use it in my striptease act. It didn't last.
Alan Cochrane challenge.
It's hot in here, isn't it?
So what's your challenge within the rules?
I just thought on the grounds of the heat and the decency and that. I mean, it's no real challenge.
She's not stripping now. She said she did a strip to you.
God bless you.
Would that be a legitimate challenge if I said she's not stripping now?
No,
I've no real challenge.
Lisa though. Gets a point for an incorrect challenge, and she has 1 second to go on the subject of keeping exotic pets, starting now.
The lizard that I used to hold...
Lisa Palmer was speaking as a whistle when again that extra point she's moved forward. And Alan, we're with you to begin, and the subject now is litter louts. Mm. Tell us something about those thoughtless people in this game, starting now.
You say thoughtless, but one of the coolest street gangs I was ever a member of was called the Litter Louts. We used to walk around Murfield, West Yorkshire, WF14, and we would just throw our rubbish behind us and think, isn't this fun? Look, I just popped a strawberry Ribena carton on the floor by the old bank chip shop. We were the Litter Louts, and we rocked. But seriously, folks, littering is not a laughing matter. I'm here to tell you.
Paul Janice.
Hasn't been so far.
Give him a bonus point for that wonderful interjection. Have you got a challenge when the rules are just
about... No, I haven't. I'm just nasty.
I quite... Alan, you were interrupted, and you still have 33 seconds on litter louts starting now.
My 33-second thoughts on littering are really, really unamusing.
Repetition of really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Remember last time?
Hint of suicide
about
it.
And there are 29 seconds available, Paul, on litter louts starting now.
I've got these exotic pets, and they're terrible litter louts. These 4 king penguins I've got, they walk around all the time dropping crisp packets, toffee sweet, rippers, all kinds of things come emanating from their beaks. These terrible creatures have come here from the North Pole. Originally, they were lost because they were the South variety, but they said to me, you know, we travel around, we're used to it, but we don't care where we drop litter. There is a bus ticket and has been put there by an Alsatian dog in 1968, and nobody has...
Well, if Paul proves one thing in this game, if you can go into the realms of fantasy, you can often keep going with style and panache and hoodwink all the others. And you've now moved forward, Paul. You're one ahead of Lisa Tarbuck, and you're one behind Jonathan Ross, who's in the lead. You're just ahead of Alan Cochrane. And, Paul, it's your turn to begin. Oh, strange subject. Who I would prefer to be. Tell us something about that subject in this game, Paul, if you can, starting now.
I suppose for the purposes of this game, who I would prefer to be would be Sherlock Holmes, a fictional character, but nevertheless one full of adventure, turning to my sidekick Watson and heading into the London fog, investigating somebody stealing a copper-coloured sword from the British Museum. Or maybe the Queen herself invites me to the Royal Palace, although they're not any other kind. And I said to him, I am the greatest detective that has ever lived. My friend here, the good man I mentioned earlier, will take down these notes of everything I say and will publish them one day in books to be this intellectual mind that was the scourge of all the London underworld. Professor Moriarty.
Leisure Challenge.
Repetition of London.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Well, listen, leader. Another point to you for that, and there's still 20 seconds for you to tell us something, who I would prefer to be starting now.
I would prefer to be the Queen of England, just for a day, to have a look at her fine art collection held at the moment in Buckingham Palace, just one place that she keeps wonderful paintings. I was arrested by them recently.
Jonathan Challenge.
Was there a repetition of wonderful? Was it wonderful art collection and wonderful? Or did
I think I purposely didn't.
You probably didn't.
And I don't think she said
I'm not going to argue with a stripper, so you go on.
So an incorrect challenge, Lisa. 7 seconds still available. Who I would prefer to be starting now?
Standing in the middle of Trafalgar Square as Nelson on top of his column, you'd have the most wonderful view.
Alan Challenge.
That was definitely a repetition of wonderful.
Yes.
Oh, of course, wasn't it?
Well, listen, darling, and you've cleverly got in with 1 second to go on who I would prefer to be starting now.
Moriarty!
And Cochrane was speaking, so Whistle Wen gained that extra point. And it's a very equal contest. They're all about the same in points at this moment. And Lisa, it's your turn to begin. And the subject is Agatha Christie. I don't know how much you know about her, but try and say something about her in this game, starting now.
Agatha Christie is a very interesting woman. She's rather wonderful, in actual fact, and is responsible for publishing an extraordinary amount of books. And, of course...
Alan Challenge.
I don't think she published them. I think she wrote them.
I think that's what we call a clever challenge.
To be fair, for a game of words, he's spot on, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Come on.
Alan, correct challenge. And you have 50 seconds. Tell us something about Agatha Christie, starting now.
As a celebrated novelist, Agatha Christie was wonderful. I remember my gran introducing me to the works by her about Hercule Poirot, the little...
I think I stumbled into a clever trap there. I was too quick off the mark, Nicholas, so I apologize. It was her and then Hercule, but when I heard the her, I'd buzzed before I could take it back.
Ah, yes. That's what happens in just a minute. Well, Alan, an incorrect challenge. 40 seconds are still available. Agatha Christie is starting now.
As well as the many books about the small Belgian detective I read, she also brought up Linford Christie, who is an excellent athlete. And I really think when you can straddle both camps, you've got...
Paul Challenge.
Are we deviating from Agatha by talking about Linford?
That's right. No relationship at all.
No.
Well, she brought him up.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
but it's not true, though. So it's deviation.
Oh, OK. Are we changing the show to just a truthful minute?
Just an honest minute.
The realms of fantasy and no more.
You can go into the realms of fantasy if you can get away with it. And you don't deviate. But, Paul, that was... at this particular moment, they're all completely equal in the score. Ooh. And, Paul, you have the subject now. There are 27 seconds available. Agatha Christie, starting now.
She is regarded as the doyenne of crime fiction in the golden period, her and other authors, of course. Agatha Christie's great creation, Miss Marple, was filmed several times, as indeed was Hercule Poirot. She disappeared in her own mystery round about 1925 when she was on holiday in Harrogate and suddenly disappeared from the scene.
Oh, leisure challenge, yes.
She didn't.
She did.
She disappeared to Harrogate.
Oh, did she?
But she had, she left her car in Guildford. And let everybody assume that
So what is your challenge, darling?
She didn't disappear off holiday in Harrogate.
She did disappear. She went to Harrogate and nobody knew where the hell she was.
Yeah, but she didn't disappear on holiday in Harrogate.
If anyone knows where she is, if you could come to bed, settle this rather unseemly dispute, it would be much appreciated.
So what is your challenge, darling?
The challenge is it's a deviation, because she wasn't on holiday
right.
in Harrogate.
I think she's right.
All right, give her the benefit
Thank
of the doubt.
Thank you, Paul.
very generous and magnanimous, Paul.
Certainly
Agatha
is.
Christie is with you, Lisa. 7 seconds starting now.
In later years, she married an archaeologist who was, in fact, in his own right, a sir, and she became Lady Mal Owen.
Round. Lisa Tarbuck, speaking as the whistle went, she's now 2 points ahead of the other three, and we're moving into the final round. Jonathan, we're back with you to begin. The subject is my signature dish. Will you tell us I don't know whether you're a cook or not, but tell us something about my signature dish. 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
My signature dish is not, as you would be forgiven for thinking, a recipe to prepare a delicious meal when friends pop round or to serve up when I get asked to contribute to a celebrity cookbook to support perhaps middle-aged men who have gout or whatever charity is currently doing the rounds on Twitter. No, it is indeed a large ceramic plate upon which I capture the autographs of all the famous and wildly talented people I met as I travelled through the decades in show business. It is, of course, harder to lug around than the traditional book, but at the same time gives me so much more pleasure, even though I am running out of space. Who would have thought Gary Lineker, for example, would favour such an enormous and flamboyant G? He's taking up about a third of the lower part of this serving device upon which people scribble at my behest. And reality stars seem to be compensating for their lack of actual talent with the size and gaudiness of their John Hancock.
Paul, your challenge.
We had a repetition of the size of.
I know.
But it was very good.
And you went. And you went for 57 seconds. Oh, we're doing this a lot, Jonathan. But that was a correct challenge, Paul.
What?
So we've got a point for a correct challenge. And you had 3 seconds to go on my signature dish starting now.
Roast potato, chickens and vegetables. That's what I love.
So let me now give you the final score, very, very fair and even, because they've all contributed so much and such fun we've had. And in second place was Jonathan Ross and Alan Cochrane, equal, with only 2 points behind our equal leaders, Lisa Tarbuck and Paul Merton. They are our joint winners this week. We do hope that you have enjoyed this particular edition of Just a Minute. It only remains to say thank you to these four fine players of the game, Paul Merton, Alan Cochrane, Jonathan Ross and Lisa Tarbuck. I thank Tootie Stevens, who's helped me with the score. She's blown the whistle with such style when the 60 seconds elapsed. We thank our producer, Katie Tyrrell. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game. And we're grateful to this lovely audience here. So from them and from me, Nicholas Parsons, thank you. And I say to our listeners, tune in again the same time when we play Just a Minute.